دورستان یعنی نو پس انسان هنو پیسان کن هرتی ایچی پروسس ایجنسی این کنه پونا دبان هسته کنه با پانس کنجا ما بسته بینده مسته بینده سو چونده را کورو این بوده سین بولو نبان لبان هسته کن Since I'm going to go since I'm going, so you say, don't wait in Golo, take a sign and see the school and see the corner. Full on a plan. Quickly, I just wanted to thank the committee that is here present today for giving us an opportunity to present our annual report and also to thank our ancestors and also thank God and also. To honor all the religious affiliations that are here today and the representations of such. And to also emphasize that the kind of work that we do does take the wisdom from those that departed and take cognizance of the contributions that have been made and to acknowledge that the heritage sector is very much about practices of the past but also with foresight into the present. I'll quickly go into the presentation just to give you a background in terms of what our mandate entails. We take our brief from the National Heritage Resources Act of 1999. So our whole operations are based on that mandate. First of all, our mandate is to introduce an integrated and interactive system for the management of national heritage resources. So we are the mandate institution. After our national heritage resources, we have mandate to promote good governance at all levels and empower civil society to nurture and conserve their heritage. We also have to lay down general principles for governing heritage resources, and we have to introduce an integrated system for the identification, assessment, and management of heritage resources. We mandated to set up the South African Heritage Resources Agency and to promote the management of heritage resources at national level to nurture a holistic celebration of our history. We also have to set norms and maintain essential national standards for the management of heritage resources. And we also have to control the export of national significant heritage objects and the import of such, as well as the illegally exported resources. We have to establish, to enable the provinces to establish heritage authorities, which must adopt power to protect and manage certain categories of heritage resources. We have to also develop an integrated and interactive system for the management of national heritage resources to provide for the protection and management of conservation weather places and areas by local authorities and to provide for methods connected here. Now, what we have done, we have divided our institution into a number of units which operationalize some of the mandates that we've been given. The first of all being the built environment. We are responsible for all built environment in the country which sits in at a national level, category one. And we're also responsible for archaeology, paleontology, and meteorites. People make jokes about the meteorites that if the UFO would land here, Sarah would dispatch to go and interact with them and see if there can be some communication. So we are also responsible for all national heritage objects. We are responsible for maritime and underwater cultural heritage. We are responsible for all burial grounds and graves. We do the national inventory. We have the Center for Training, Research and Education. We have grading and declaration of national heritage sites. And we have provincial offices, and then of course your other corporate functions, such as finance, human resources, and corporate affairs. In terms of our achievements, we offices in the provinces, and most of them just have been functioning in terms of raising public awareness of heritage resources management, and they also comment on the heritage impact assessment, and also secretariat, particularly the housing office and the Western Cape offices of the permits, particularly which entails to the built environment. Our office in Western Cape has facilitated the declaration which was announced last year of the Victor Vesta Matiba House, and we are very much intensively involved in mobilizing and also working with communities. terms of declaring the Wyman, the Langa, Table Mountain District 6, Boca, and Observatory. So we are in a much more developed state now towards conservation. In terms of archaeology and paleontology and meteorites, you may remember that there was a big find by Professor Lee Becker from Vest University of Australopithecus River. Sarah being responsible and monitoring such development has been at the forefront of supporting and making sure that the research was conducted according to expected standards within the sector. We have been monitoring the development at the Vele Mine Colliery in Mapungubwe. I actually need to leave after this to go for a mission. The mission is here from UNESCO to monitor or to get a sense of what is happening, whether it's going to be threatening the whole issues of the mine development. We comment and review all the archaeological and paleontological impact assessments with the same staff that I have. They've done incredible work of doing the 700 assessments. We just finished the database, which has taken snapshots from 1972 to 2008 of putting everything into a CD, which allows researchers to be able to upload that information of the maps and field surveys. We then have another unit called Maritime and Underwater Cultural Heritage. This is one of the less known functions in the country. We monitor the whole coastline in terms of shipwrecks, but we're also moving into the interior to begin to look at terrestrial waters. So technically, there's 32 nations under our sea in terms of shipwrecks, and Sarah is responsible for that mandate. Recognizing that we have challenges in terms of staff, we entered into quite a number of strategic partnerships. One of the strategic partnerships was with the coastal integrated coastal management so that they can assist us with monitoring our operations. We also have a memorandum of understanding with Robben Island, and this is particularly because Robben Island also in its integrated management plan has to look after the nautical miles which protect the integrity of the island. So we entered into an agreement because we are able then to monitor the coastline and also to begin to raise awareness on the protection of maritime heritage, underwater cultural heritage. So we got funding from the Dutch to be able to raise awareness on underwater cultural heritage, and as a result, we had launch of the program, which was officiated by Minister Kinwana and the ambassador from the Dutch. And we made sure that there were students from all over the provinces. We had 12 teachers and 5 learners that participated in the program, just raising awareness of and also opening up to say that there is a career area that has not been given much attention. We also did a press dive. The ambassador also went into the water. I also went into diving, and the press went into diving just to raise awareness of this particular area, and got very good press coverage, which means that in effect there is a beginning of recognition of the importance of the sector. We then also had a workshop in Robben Island, which began to set up a strategy for the region, because it's a very expensive business to say to the region, how can we collaborate to make sure that we begin to address the issues of maritime issues. And we had Namibia, Mozambique, Tanzania, Kenya, and the Netherlands supported us with putting together the strategy, Australia and the UK. This we used with most of the funding that came from the Dutch. We already have trained 65 trains on site mapping on Robben Island. We are using Robben Island particularly so that we begin to also emphasize the importance and deep competence behind it. Then our other function is burial grounds and graves. This is one area which is also receiving quite a lot of attention. Our mandate is not just in South Africa. Our mandate is very, very broad because we are also responsible for all graves of where victims of conflict have fallen in the world. As a result, we had to relocate 4 graves in Uganda to Kawateta, which were threatened by agricultural development, and also rehabilitate some other graves. We restored the grave of Mr. Ian Jones, which was in Moscow, one of the number of permit applications for rescue and relocations of graves. There was a development that took place in Paracral in Johannesburg where the developer stumbled on human remains. And as a result, when the test excavation was done, there were 70 human remains. And usually the developers just put it into a box and they bury it without observing the proper ethics, but this time we put our foot down and said, Sarah is interested in affected parties and we want to make sure that certain standards are adhered to in terms of the reburial. So we conducted the reburial of 70 miners because miners classified as victims of conflict. And some of the people that were buried initially there with heads with their faces down and all other issues that have been, atrocities that have been conducted within the mining. We found that some of the miners were actually indentured labor from China. So the Chinese took part in our ceremony in Riberia, observing the rites that should have been performed when the miners were buried. We also participated closely with Robben Island because some of the victims of conflict that were incarcerated in Robben Island that had been missing from as early as the 60s were found in some of the graves in Stickland. So we were working with the NPA in terms of the data and of DNA sampling and public participation so that those remains can be exhumed. We found that there were stacked graves. People were buried in three graves, etc. In one grave, 30 people. We also are responsible for heritage objects. All people that want to export objects of national significance will apply to us. We have dealt with 24 permits. We have issued 15 permits for exports of artworks and a book. We have 2 temporary exports of luminous standing paintings. We have 10 permits that we've declined exportation, and one of the permits that we declined was the exportation of the Freedom Charter, which we then worked very closely with the Department of Arts and Culture to make sure that it remains in the country, which was then bought by the National Archives, by Lidenfield. We have permit applications for the Masumbube objects, which need to be processed for restoration of them. We also wrote an article in South Warner just to publicize and raise awareness, particularly because some of these objects fly or they go out through the sea. We are responsible for the national estate and we need to have a sense of what this national estate is made of. So we do the inventory of this estate, but we are participating very close with provinces too, so that they can adhere to the standards, but we can also have a similar format of inventorizing our objects. In terms of grading, we have graded and declared the substantial season last year, and we've also graded devolution of the responsibility in our province, because SARA is responsible for grade 1 and national sites. The provinces are responsible for grade 2 and the municipalities. Now we have capacity challenges there, and that is why the education center is being opened to begin to address these capacities and make sure that there is a school on the ground. Of course, we do have, as you can see, how broad our mandate is, and the allocation that we have, that is actually, with all these successes that we've made, that it is quite a small allocation, but we strive to make sure that we meet our mandate. I will stop there, and I will pass on the next presentation to the CFO to begin to look at the financial issues.
Instead, we've got remedial actions in which we've Now, there's two. I'm going to start with land and building. We should declare error. The finding there is saying the portion of the old port in Durban was valued in the current year by the expert valuators at 3.5 million. The valuation on the same property for the 2009 financial year was valued at 17.3 million. Now, you can also notice that there is a major fluctuation due to this property being included in the 2009 valuation and which was owned. They say it was not owned by the entity. It's the finding from the agent. Yes, we did notice that there was a very big fluctuation. As a result, we therefore made a prior year assessment error journal, and therefore we corrected the financial as such. But what we now plan to do is that for all the property valuations that we receive, and which you must note are prepared by the third parties, in future we are going to compare the values, which is going to be the responsibility of the executive officer for corporate affairs, whose property portfolio is under, and also when those are forwarded to me as the CFO, I will therefore review the values and therefore do the revaluation tender prior to processing. If we notice any significant deviations, we promise that we're going to make a follow-up and find the reason why there is a deviation for that reason. Then, the other issue that resulted in us getting the emphasis of the matter is the insurance prepayment. Again, this issue was, the root cause for this issue was the capacity issue, because if you read at the finding, it says the insurance payment for the 1st of August 2008 to the 1st July 2009 was made in 2009 financial year. The full payment amounting to 778,000 was raised as an insurance expense in the 2009 financial year. So basically, it is an accrual issue which, due to lack of capacity and competency within the finance, because there is a very huge gap between the CFO and the other finance staff members. Therefore, it has got a strain within the organization, resulted in us not to note or even pick up the accrual that we were supposed to have accounted for in this financial year. Those, honorable members, were just the two issues that resulted in the emphasis of the matter. I'll now talk to other significant matters, which if we do not do anything as management within the next 12 months, which is the financial year period in which we are in, they might result in us maybe possibly getting a qualified audit opinion. The first one is the inadequate insurance cover. It was established that the property, plant and equipment is not adequately insured. Now, here we were sitting with, if I may make just one example quickly of what that was. It was one boat, a very old boat, which is no longer used and is in the process of being disposed, that was not fully insured but underinsured. As a result, this finding was made. Now, what we said was, we as management have therefore decided to forward our fifth asset register to our insurers to ascertain that all financial all fifth assets are insured to correct the replacement values, which we have already done. And every 6 months we're going to review the values of the assets and inform the insurers of anything which they have. I must also state that there is a dispute around this finding. As a result, the audit committee is still discussing it with the, because it is impractical that the whole six asset register can be insured. As a result, it's putting financial strain on us. This year we paid around 850 just for insurance of our assets, and that's how the prorated premium. Imagine when we pay for the full year how much it is. Therefore, my next point will be the depreciation charge. The fixed asset register, they claim it does not agree to the depreciation as per the financial statement. due to the lack of competence within the organization. I mean, the limited. But now we've now started to agree and reconcile our general ledger to the fixed asset register on a monthly basis. And therefore, I review all those records on a monthly basis to make sure that what is lying on the TP agrees to what is on the fixed asset register. The next one is trade debtors. The finding is saying here, data reflected on the age analysis do not exist, which means there were data that were in the age analysis that did not exist. Now, during this audit, it was established that the data's age analysis reflected an amount of 5,439.50 owed by L5R, who is a debtor to SARA. And therefore, SARA debtor's personnel, which is our finance officer, has however confirmed that this particular debtor has been paying on regular basis. Therefore, here it was an issue of non-communication between the property officer and the financial officer, and therefore it resulted to this issue made a finding. Between the two units, which is corporate affairs and finance, we therefore agreed that we will meet with the two officials and develop a process and encourage regular communication between the two, which we've already done. And also for the finance officer to confirm the rental amounts reflected on the invoices from the signed lease agreement. And also on monthly basis, we are now reconciling, and we have been reconciling the rentals to the age analysis. The next finding will be the expenditure. Here they claim there were no submissions to accompany the due expenses. In other submissions, there were no quotations. It is an issue of supply chain management. And we've also acknowledged that we do need a person who will mainly focus on supply chain management. As a result, we advertised and in the process of appointing somebody who would be focusing on supply chain management. But in the interim, therefore, we've decided that we will conduct a workshop where we will remind our staff members of procurement policies and procedures. And also now we check every payment that we make, that a submission was made, which is a request to procure, and that quotations are also attached to that request. I review those payments every time when we make payments. The last one is the assessment of an overall reporting of predetermined objectives. We refer to this as performance information. That's what AG also refers to it. Here it is where we are supposed to report on performance of our predetermined objectives according to the strategic plan. And as an organization, we've received a disclaimer because of the following reasons on this issue. One, there was a lack of an overall formal policy procedures regarding the administration of performance information management and SARA. The second one was the objectives were tested and found not to have been determined using the SMART principles. Lastly, no audit evidence could be obtained for specific objectives set, or audit evidence obtained did not relate to the specific measurement criteria set. Because we've been receiving these three findings on performance information for the past 3 years, as management, we therefore took stock and realized that we need to get experts, people who can assist us in this one. And therefore, we opted to go and approach auditing firms for proposals so that they can come and assist us with performance information. Because performance information is this new system that has been raised or introduced by AG, wherein they want to check whether we are delivering as mandated and whether what we claim we have delivered, I mean, or what we have performed, have we indeed
was referring to a incorrect funding module that is being used. What is the correct funding module that has got to be used? Obviously, you've also got a huge your organogram must probably be revisited in doing so. I need to understand the steps surrounding that. The insurance, your costs of insurances to properties. I do know that other departments do not actually even pay for insurances to properties because it's just too expensive. Why then your department pay on, and I'm referring on fixed assets, I'm not referring on removable assets like vehicles and all those things. I actually want to understand, why are you different to other state departments? The reason there. You will not get your department right if you do not strengthen your financial department. We will sit next year with the same procedures as we are sitting here today, and with some of the same events that we are sitting here today with. And if there's a shortage of financial experts in your field, you did refer to a auditing firm that might or that would assist you in order to readdress some of the issues. Are your department looking at external resources, or maybe with a partnership with the Department of Arts and Culture in order to maybe address some of these issues? Because that, I mean you have got to address that. I still want to say to the new council, you know, you might be new, but you still account for the actions. And there's no way that we can do everything around the map. And we shouldn't try to say that we will address these issues. I mean there are some major concerns and there are some major issues. You know, 21% of your KPIs weren't met. That means 80%. That means 20% of your activities you couldn't do according to your report. And how does this actually affect your new strategic approach to the new financial year? Are you being able to address your shortage on those commitments? Looking at your staff component. Your issue of permits, I've noticed that there was a quite dramatic reducement of permits, the allocating of permits. That's on your page 27, on especially some of the fields, and there was a focus on one that was exceptionally high, but I'm actually looking at the others. What is the reason of your department not actually look, because I'm looking at the trend of every year as it goes ahead. Is it maybe due to what my colleague said, that you actually lost maybe the actual resource, the human resources, or the capacity of that human resources to actually deal with that permit that it is there? And have you got actually, and what is your backlog in your office concerning permits? Are you sitting with a huge backlog, and can you deal with that? Thank you.
First page from the end. On your third stakeholders. I just need some clarity on this, whether you have, you know, some stakeholders that you have identified, that you work with, or this is open to any of the civil society stakeholders that are there. The last one would be on the ninth page from the end. 20 participants involved in regional planning. What criteria do you use? Because I see some of the, you know, countries that reflect onto this and in fact who were involved in the regional planning. What criteria do you use to for selecting, you know, those countries?
Document then fulfills three objectives. First of all, it gives us a stake and analysis of the institution's efforts from our system. And then it makes it very clear for us to understand what are the issues that we need to address in terms of skills development for the country, because we, our mandate is actually national, in terms of national sites and objects of national significance. Three, it becomes the base document for costing the act, because it begins to analyze what the institution has gone through and what has not been covered. So it fulfills those two functions. Three, it puts it very clear in terms of the challenges that we've had as an institution in terms of capacity, because it even begins to suggest a format or organogram in terms of how, what kind of people we would need, the levels of those people to be, begin to meet this mandate. If you look at the built environment and the mandate that we have with in the legislation, we should be employing close to 200 people. But we have done this document without asking for consultants, because the people in there understand what the issues are. So the preventative advantage of asset culture is to begin to deal with treasure to say this is the state of concern. Secondly, the situation of heritage resources is a problem. I must indicate that my predecessors opened up offices in the province. And this was to support the provincial heritage resources authorities to develop capacity. Unfortunately, the provinces did not take up the responsibility, and we were sitting with those offices, and as a result, we are looking at winding up and analyzing our situation in the provinces, because it's the embassies of the provinces who need to take over the mandate of looking at level grade 2 and grade 1 sites. Because our mandate, as articulated and analyzed in this document, is what we should be doing at the national level. Because the money that we get from Treasury is for national assistance. So we are working at dealing with the issues of the incorrect funding model. And we are in the process, we have already are working on the revision of the organogram. We have worked with a new draft of organogram, which we are deliberating on. External resources, we have been writing quite a lot of funding proposals to also get resources. That is why we've got funding from the Dutch, but we've also made use of the capital works budget, and we've got some of the funding there to begin to rehabilitate one of our buildings in Grahamstown. So we are constantly writing. And we also have written funding proposals to address some of our archaeological sites that were in desperate need of some support in terms of infrastructure. I think I've talked about the issues with KPA and the staff component challenges in the provinces, that in actual fact, our mandate is not provincial, but we should support the provinces in getting capacity to meet their mandate. So there's issues. In terms of permit reduction, this is another challenge, because in actual fact, when it comes to archaeological permits, the provinces are supposed to be dealing with some of the heritage impact assessments. So now we are inundated because of lack of capacity within the provinces of all permits coming to the national office for us to deal with those permits, which means that there's a serious stress level in terms of staff, in terms of dealing with those permits, which provinces should be processing and dealing with. So the reduction could be related to the fact that we have the challenges in terms of dealing with the large numbers that are coming in. So, but we've been really sitting on top of addressing those things. Skills development plan, I think I the Department of Arts and Culture started the process of looking at the skills, the whole skills sector within the country when it comes to heritage. But we recognize that, Sarah, that within the legislation we are mandated at making sure that there's capacity on the ground. So that is why we took this document and we begin to operationalize it to say, if we have to be able to support provinces, first of all, they must make sure that the provincial heritage authorities are in place. Because you can't be supporting councils of those provinces. gaps within this calling of the Act to begin to address the competencies that are missing from there. So, however, the center is also beginning to capacitate the staff that we have in Ghana. So it mainly aims at our personnel, it mainly addresses issues of provinces, but it also aims at dealing and working with teachers to begin to address issues in terms of your curriculum issues, because career heritage is not well presented in the curriculum, but museum is presented. And the workshops that were conducted were on the inventory, because as we do an inventorization of our heritage assets, the provinces need to be doing the same, but they also need to be on board in terms of the format that SARA is using, so that we don't have different formats that are not reconciled to be able to give us a good status of where we are. And then the issue of the participants that took part in the maritime program in Robben Island, this was a result of regional cooperation. As a result, that Minister Paula Jordan had brought the countries together to begin to say, in order for us to begin to have an understanding of maritime issues, the equipment is very expensive, the boats are very expensive, and there's very few people. We have two people that are responsible for maritime and underwater cultural heritage for the whole country. And if you begin to look at the size of the coast, it's very short. That is why, therefore, we set up strategic partnerships with Robben Island, so that we develop, we make sure that they're diverse. We are working with the national parks to make sure that they're diverse. But as a region, to begin to deal with the issues of looting, we have to work together, because we're different countries. That is why, therefore, we have the particular country that we are talking about. As a result, we've even signed a state-to-state agreement on assisting each other on maritime issues. The issue of the offices in the provinces, I think I have alluded to it, to say that in actual fact, grade 2 sites and grade 1 sites are the responsibilities of provinces and municipalities. The areas where we have responsibility are the national sites. And we do have challenges in terms of dealing with provincial offices that are too far. That is why we are revising and looking at our program to begin to have an impact in dealing with those particular issues. The other questions I will pass on to my colleagues, because they have some issues. Thank you.
The third question on this point is the one regarding whether I have already conducted the SEM section.
According to our session, this has suffered a lot of success from the placement of the trailer. So the result is the And we will be having this workshop on the 3rd and the 4th of December. Regarding the appointment of the service provider, who is going to assist us with the reporting of the predetermined objectives, we've already developed the terms of reference which we've issued to the three audit companies, which have already submitted on Friday, and we are in the process of evaluating the three proposals so that we can make an appointment in the date regard. Now, the proper funding model, I think the CEO has already spoken to it, but the two aspects that were raised there was the organogram, as well as what will be the proper funding model. The proper funding model will be for SARA to be funded according to its mandate, according to what the Act tells us we need to perform, and that's why we therefore undertook an exercise of going through the process that we've named the combing of the Act, which the CEO has spoken to. And as a result of that process, we've also developed a new organogram, since we are going through restructuring, and when those two documents have been approved and have been presented to Council, we will then strategize as to how do we take them forward to enable us to be funded accordingly. So we are going to use the two. On the issue of why we are paying for insurance, for our land and building. Initially, we were not paying for this insurance. I mean, we were not paying for land and building until we received audit findings from AG, which were saying we have not fully insured our assets. And the recommendations that they made was we need to insure our land and building at the replacement value, which we therefore did. And now it has turned when the new chairperson, which is Ms. Makosa Balambulani, took office of the audit committee. She highlighted the fact that even the Department of Public Works doesn't insure their buildings. Why are we? Hence, I said in my presentation, there is currently a dispute between SARA, being represented by the audit committee, and the auditor general on the issue of land and building, because we want not to insure those assets, but to insure the rest as the immovable assets. I'm looking at the partnership with DIC regarding lack of skill or expertise in the finance. Through this new organogram structure, the restructuring which is happening, I think finance has already taken into account where the lack of capacity is, and upon the approval of the organogram and the availability of funding, we will address the issue of capacity. What are we doing to address in the new strategy to address the issues that we raised in the audit finding? I think the question is this. We've already had about two workshops with all the unit heads and the provincial managers where we were somehow capacitating them as to what role do they have to play in the strategy of the organization and what contributions they need to bring in us achieving our predetermined objectives. During those workshops, it became apparent that there was a lack of understanding from our staff members of the commitment that they need to put in what they promised to have. And we also realized that we usually bite more than we can chew based on the funding which we are having. So in the new stress plan that we are going to be submitting end of February, the final one, we've tried not to bite more than we can chew, as well as we've tried to be realistic of what is achievable and not, and stop dreaming when we prepare our stress plan. So we've become more realistic of what exactly we need to have on our stress plan and also conducted the workshops. I think I've answered the remaining questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, again. I just want to again re-emphasize the structural problem of the funding of the sector, which becomes more acute when you look at the position of SARA. In my previous life in the heritage sector, I visited the African Style Museum. They had a budget of no more than 1.5 million. But in terms of what was required for them in terms of procurement, they said there was a need to employ a separate staff to procure, a separate staff to do this and that, and still run the operations. And they just didn't have any more room to deal with these matters. When you look at the National Heritage Council, it started with a budget of 14.7 million in 2004. And 5 years later, it had doubled that budget. But when you look at SARA, where you have permits being issued, sites being declared, and where you may even face litigation if you don't do some of the things well, the budget has barely moved over the years. And yet you see the mandate is as big as it is. With municipalities, what they call social cluster budget, no more than 50,000 rands per year for most of them. Every everything else is taken care of when it comes to arts and culture, there is some 60,000 residual funding that you find there. So sometimes I do think that if this committee and all the relevant stakeholders were to assist in just re-examining the whole funding of the sector, tourism is what benefits most, but what is being consumed by tourists, being heritage items, are funded the least.
Thank you, Chief. I'm going to do two follow-up questions because I thought you didn't answer me clearly on two of the issues. The first was the backlogs of permits, and although you did explain, you didn't come to the point to tell me, are there any backlogs? Are you sitting with backlogs? Because you were referring to the lack of capacity and the stress levels and on so on. But I actually wanted to understand legitimately, are we sitting with backlogs in that sector? That's the first one. The second one, which is a huge concern to me now, is that looking at your staff component of 82 and what you should actually have in the figures of 200, if I can quote you in that reason, giving you
one unit,
it's to about 200. It then asks me, can you fulfill your mandate? And my honestly, I've got to sit here and I must say, you do not, although you partially fulfill, you might in some circumstances, you do not actually fulfill your mandate fully, because you gave me a very good example of the maritime with only two officials. And we then clearly can say that we do not fulfill that role as it is yet because of all the circumstances. And that is a serious concern which your department and the Department of Agriculture has got to address in order to fulfill its mandate. And I do understand the issue of funding comes into place, but it is a concern, and it's a service that we need to deliver as this council. And I truly hope that in your future planning, I do understand all the planning reports that do come in, but government has got to step up to the table, and we've got to make sure that this happens. One of the issues that I did not raise in the beginning was you talked about the removing of battle sites from outside border countries, and I do know that it is a costly exercise. I'm just trying to determine, is the cost or the determine of that, who takes responsibility for that? Is it yourself? Because I'm not just talking about the actual cost, because there are certain processes in doing certain issues that has got to be reported to. There's a whole lot of legal steps to be taken, and that itself comes to a financial burden. And looking at your circumstances, I just wanted to understand that. Maybe also Chairperson, I'm not sure if there are going to be some sort of recommendations afterwards from us as a committee that we might have wanted to do, because there are certain clarity specific around the different opinions of the AG and the committee, especially on paying some sort of guidelines. And I think I would like to see that the committee or that the SARA actually, through the department, actually comes with an opinion regarding the payment of those assets, of those insurance, and there has got to be a time frame to. But you will guide me in some of those recommendations.
I think members are free to raise whatever recommendations.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 13 of the annual report, under the auxiliary services,
concern after what we've heard. Chair, I wonder if we couldn't perhaps request or propose that we also have access to that document that the CEO is referring to once that basically refined and work through it, so that we can get a sense of the real need there is, because we will have to assist when budget time comes. You know, that we can make informed recommendations.
Anything else from them? Yeah, I think, on like the last, remember, we just spoke last night, because that's what you want. You want us to help. And certification, you know, that's really important. Why we are here. We want to know what your challenges are. And you see, we also don't want to remove whatever dynamic relationship you may have with the department. You know, if you tell us that you have crisis, you know, the department itself, you're correct, this is one department that is really very, very under-resourced. But now with all the changes with regard to budgeting and so on, you know, members have some influence in what eventually gets to given to the department and to our agency, of course. So we will, from our side, once we've got, you know, very clear picture of what it is, so that we can interact even with the minister at some point on what we think about, especially, you know, the mandate for Sara to be able to, we must create that enabling environment for Sara to carry out its mandate. And I think, you know, as you can clearly hear that members are concerned, we're not happy with the way things are going. You know, you're one entity, we've got problems, you know, very serious challenges, and your challenges is that you want money to carry out your mandate, you know. We come across problems where there's very little to do with money, but, you know, just to find the chair to be in speaking terms with the CEO. So I think and those are serious things, because then you have all the suspensions and all the investigations and so on. You don't have a problem as, you know, a collective official and your council. And I really think that is quite commendable. We don't have such problems. And we will really, from our side, try, you know, our best to ensure that we're not promising that you will get your money in the next budget, but we can always try to influence what this process. And let me also, but I think you should just respond to the questions or the follow-up questions before we do the challenge.
Thank you very much, Chair. Members of the committee, for the question. In terms of payments, we actually, the staff in accredited pilot village have worked themselves to the ground, so we do not have backlogs. But we do have backlogs in terms of requests for declarations of staff at the national level, because we have two staff members who are supposed to declare national level. So we do have those backlogs. There are backlogs in some areas, but in terms of the payment, we've been able to really work ourselves to the ground.
Excuse me, are you saying there are no backlogs for
backlog, but the payments are not completed in the time that is specified.
Oh, okay.
They are not
delayed because of the challenges.
Yes, they are delayed in terms of issue of payments. In terms of the issue of exhumation and the burial site is actually quite a highly political one,
yeah,
in the sense that the moment you begin to talk, I mean, if you look at gold raised in Zimbabwe, it's a money earner, and there's no way that Zimbabwe would exhume the remains of gold. The same are potential challenges that we would have if we would start to exhume either remains of certain countries, because we have what is called grave tourism.
Mm.
And now with the opening up of the preparation of the graves of Charlotte Matsele, Lydia Ngoyi, and Helen Joseph, you begin to see a stream of young people who are beginning to take tourists to those sites to begin to interpret. So we have to get political will to begin to negotiate either Tanzania, Ghana, or Namibia, I mean Uganda, in terms of the exhumation. So it's an area that we have not even at this moment in time gone into.
The total cost for the repair was 497,600. It's written on page 41 of the annual report. That money was funded by the Department of Agriculture. It didn't come from our operation.
And the other department also that are involved in the whole process,
Chairperson, through you, this is the slide that you referred to here. Just to say as well that there's been lots of problems with developers tricking people in the relocation of graves, like making them pay R100 and then they relocate the graves. So in a way, this exercise of the reburial was also to raise awareness on the rights of people, particularly when it comes to the issue of the graves are protected by the Act. But it also forms a part of closure for many families, because we had lots of people from Soweto, where we also had a workshop besides just the reburial for them to recognize what their rights are, but to also find a sense of closure, because lots of them lost relatives that were buried and are unknown.
So on the question on page 36, where only the amounts, the numbers were given and we do not money spent, I think we noted the concern and we informed the executive officer that in their report they need to give the amount as well as what the cost was. Thank you.
But it doesn't mean that's not common. We see some of that.
Off on the issues that have been raised by the management, and also just to acknowledge that during the period of the financial year, we did not necessarily have a council that was effective in terms of leadership, and also which then makes it difficult to do an oversight as an audit committee in making sure that whatever that you have agreed with is actually taken in authority. With a new council, we believe there will be some changes, and also for us to be effective. But furthermore, what I wanted to highlight, with the analysis that the CEO has mentioned, it's going to really help us to be able to look at proper reporting from the input to process to output. Because unless you have done that analysis, you will then be able to know how can you measure that performance. Since we did not have that before, it was really difficult to set up the objectives to be on a smart principle and be able to measure it from the regular basis. But also another thing that I would like to highlight, the agents itself operate in an environment that is very much unpredictable. So it's more of responding to the community needs. So as much as we would like to plan things on a strategic plan and put strategic objectives, we have to try by all means to be flexible in understanding that it will be a responsive. For example, I'll make an example, the applications. We do not detect how many applications are going to come in. but we can detect our processes, how they will take to actually respond to those communities. So with that analysis, we believe it's going to assist us in developing a proper performance information, and which might actually mean next year we might still have a qualification of performance information, because the report that she's referring to might not have been ready to be implemented on the current strategy plan that we're working on. But in the long future, it will address quite a lot of issues. And thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think thank you.